Ethel Waters was born at the end of the 19th century in Chester, Pennsylvania. Her mother was just 13 years old and had gotten pregnant after being brutally raped. The family was poor, and Waters remembers, quote, "My close kin didn't even like me. I was a gangly gal and unwanted." Ethel Waters went on to have an extraordinary career as a singer and actress. She was a trailblazer, a big influence on other singers. Lena Horne called her the mother of us all. She could also be difficult to work with and had a troubled personal life. Our guest, Donald Bogle, has brought her to life in his book, Heatwave, The Life and Career of Ethel Waters. He's a film historian, and his books have focused on African-American entertainment. He teaches film at New York University and the University of Pennsylvania. And Donald Bogle, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be back, Marty.
You know, having read your book, I was thinking, why don't people know Ethel Waters the way we know Lena Horne or Billie Holiday or Josephine Baker?
You know, it's interesting that for a woman who was so important in the 20th century, a woman who just broke through so many barriers, and a woman who really helped to make a way for people like Lena Horne and Billie Holiday and Dinah Washington and so many others, that she's not well remembered today. I mean, and she's not totally forgotten, because you'll see things about her in theater history, sometimes in film, but we don't know the name. People don't the way they do a Billie Holiday. And part of the problem may be that Ethel Waters was she was indeed a very, very difficult woman. Very difficult.
To work with, live with,
all of that. And fought with a number of people. And it's been said that what happened to her later, because of those difficulties, that there was no one really who would speak up for her. No one who would really sort of make sure that her place in history was there. That they just became so annoyed by her that in many ways they wanted to forget. The other thing I should say about Ethel Waters was, you know, later in her life she became very conservative, and she lived to be 81 years old, and that also, I mean, she didn't die, you know, young and beautiful, struck down early or anything like that. I mean, Billie Holiday was in her 40s when she died, and so that's another thing that can happen in our culture.
Well, let me go to the beginning and the fact that she was born here in the Philadelphia area in Chester, Pennsylvania. As I said, her mother had been raped. She got pregnant, gave birth to Ethel Waters, grew up poor, and it sounds like poor and feeling alone in the world.
She felt very much alone. And, you know, her mother, in my research, one thing I came across, Ethel said she was about 13. Some reports say she was a little bit older, and even some wonder about the actual rape itself. But Ethel always believed that, and this is what Ethel said throughout, you know, throughout her life, once she started to address it publicly. And for Ethel, what happened was that for her mother, Ethel was a stigma. That her mother, according to Ethel, was very religious, and her mother suddenly had this unwanted child, and I mean a child born out of wedlock, and so every time she looked at Ethel, she was reminded of the circumstances of Ethel's conception, and so her mother really didn't, according to Ethel, didn't want to have anything to do with her. Now, what's very, very interesting is that Ethel moved around. She was born in Chester. She sometimes was here in Philadelphia, living here. At another point, she was in Camden. She moved around a lot, but basically Philadelphia and Chester were the main places. And she lived with family members. She lived also with her mother's sisters, these aunts who didn't care about Ethel. And so it was, and she was a big girl. I mean, she grew to be, you know, to be a big girl very early on. And she said that no one wanted to really
a big gangly girl.
Yeah, to hold that kind of girl on her lap. So she felt very, very alienated, isolated. But I must say this, and it's very important for what happens in her work later. With all of that, the two people Ethel Waters apparently loved more than anyone. One was her grandmother, Sally, who did give her attention and who cared deeply about Ethel. And the other person was Ethel's mother.
Oh, interesting.
That Ethel always wanted to reach her. And Ethel was very touching. One time she said that she felt that if her mother just got to know her, maybe she'd like her.
Well, she met Eleanor Roosevelt. In fact, there's a picture in your book of yes. their meeting. And what she wanted Eleanor Roosevelt to do was to hug her.
Yes, yes.
Hug
she
her.
Said, yes, Mrs. Roosevelt.
And she was a grown woman at that time.
A grown woman, would you hug me? Eleanor Roosevelt was one of her idols. She really looked up to her. And so, yes, Eleanor Roosevelt came backstage to see Ethel after a performance. And that's what Ethel said to her, was about the first thing she said. So she went through her life wanting that...
love?
She was always craving love and attention. And the interesting thing was that my feelings about her is that the only time that she really could feel she was getting it was when she was on stage.
And hearing the applause.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a bit like Michael Jackson in a sense. The only time these people really feel they're fully people, that mm-hmm. they have real approval and have a real sense of themselves as full people, it's when they're on stage. And this was one of the things that made her. I mean, she was one of the great live performers of the 20th century. I mean, there's some people we may hear on records or people we see in film, but then when you see them in a live concert or performance, it's not the same. But Ethel was... I mean, she gave everything in those live performances.
Well, I do want to play a song, but I want to talk first of with you about how she, once I got discovered, because in a sense, it was amateur night, it was in Philadelphia, and she got up and sang
yes.
in a club, and people took notice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing about her, she didn't have much of a formal education. She had a very early marriage. The marriage
she was about 13.
Yes,
yeah,
she
well.
Was 13, and the marriage was over in about a year or so. She was working as a chambermaid in a hotel here in Philadelphia. She said she sometimes would look in they had large mirrors in some of the rooms, and after she'd done her work, she would sort of pretend she was taking bows. Her great ambition was to perhaps become the maid for a wealthy white woman who traveled, and she'd get to see the world. Nonetheless, she loved to hit the dance clubs when she wasn't working, and she was at a club. It wasn't a dance club. It was sort of a kind of nightclub, and it was on her birthday, and she sang that night, and they said the room just stopped, and there were two men there, two African-American promoters, sort of producers, and they wanted her to go on the road, and that was the beginning. Ironically, she goes on the road. She only goes to Baltimore, to the Lincoln Theater there, and she discovers that they are cheating her out of her full salary. And, you know, with all these difficulties that Ethel Waters would have, this was a thing early in the career, really at the start, where she became suspicious of the people around her. And, you know, we can understand why.
Well,
they're cheating her out of the money. Yeah.
Ripping her
but
off.
She continued to, she kept on performing.
Well, let me play a song that in many ways made her famous early on in her career, a song called Dinah. This is from 1925, written for a nightclub show called Plantation Review. Let's listen. This is Ethel Waters.
Carolina gave me Dinah. I'm the proudest one beneath the Dixie sun. News is spreading about a wedding. I hear church bells ringing. Hear the song my heart keeps singing. Dinah, is there anyone finer in the state of Carolina? If there is, then you know. Dinah, with her Dixie eyes blazing, how I love to sit and gaze in to the eyes of Dinah Lee. Yet every night my heart shakes with fright. ever wandered to China.
And that's Ethel Waters singing a song called Dinah, recorded in 1925. And Donald Bogle, listening to her voice, first of all, it's so expressive.
Yes.
And her, even her diction is
the
so
diction,
is so interesting. And this is a woman that had little or no, or yeah, no formal training.
Yes. And the interesting thing about her, when you talk about the diction, she did, as I said, she didn't have much of a formal education. But Ethel, you know, I came across letters she had written, and the letters, you know, they're well written, they're very expressive. She had those skills in writing, and then of course in speaking. Now, she did not grow up in the South, and so she wasn't like Bessie Smith or Ma Rainey. She didn't have a Southern accent or dialect. The diction, the clarity, was very important to the effect that she had on audiences, particularly because she was singing for urban audiences there in New York. And by the way, this Plantation Review was done at the Plantation Club, which was a white club. It was an after theaters place, and whites were coming there to hear her. Ethel Waters had made her real impact in New York when she got to New York in the very early 20s. She had appeared in a club in Harlem called Edmonds.
Famous place,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was a famous place, and the word got out quickly that this was just another kind of voice. And she is one of the first of the African-American performers singing uptown in New York that whites from downtown went uptown to hear. But nonetheless, with a song like Dinah, she is, it's really melodious pop. And Ethel,
it's not the blues, right?
No, it's not the blues. That's the thing about her. Ethel Waters, you know, it's very interesting. Her idols were Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey. Huh. And these were like classic blues singers. But Ethel knew that she was not that kind of singer. Bessie, when you hear Bessie, and Ma Rainey too, it's coming from the gut, and they're in the grip often of an intense emotional experience. And sometimes you may not even know the words that they're saying. Sometimes, not always, but you'll get sounds, you'll get the groans, and you may get the growls and so forth. Ethel wasn't like that. Yeah. I mean, because Ethel, you knew what she was saying, and Ethel was always, I feel, a step removed from the experience. She wasn't caught up in it while she was singing of it. She was telling you about it. She was still affected. You still got the emotion. But she was letting you know what happened to her.
And the Ethel we are talking about is Ethel Waters, and our guest is Donald Bogle. He's written a biography of Ethel Waters called Heat Wave, The Life and Career of Ethel Waters. He's a film historian, and we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, and play some more music featuring Ethel Waters. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Germantown Friends School Craft Show supports WHYY, bringing woodworkers, glassblowers, fiber artists, jewelers, weavers, and other fine craft artisans from around the nation to Philadelphia. The GFS 28th Annual Juried Craft Show takes place this weekend, Friday evening through Sunday afternoon, at Germantown Friends School. Cafe opens Saturday and Sunday, serving sweet and savory treats. 215-900-7734 or online at germantownfriends.org/craftshow.
When Nils Lofgren was just a kid in Washington, D.C., he talked himself into Neil Young's dressing room and ended up recording with Crazy Horse. We'll also hear the story of how he ended up in Bruce's E Street Band. Don't miss Nils Lofgren, my guest, on the next Conversations from the World Cafe.
Tomorrow night at 10 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Center School, a private day school in Abington, Pennsylvania, with 22 years of success, preparing children with learning differences for high school, college, and beyond. Using research-based learning strategies, small class sizes, and master-level teachers, Center School provides elementary and middle school students with a strong foundation in all content areas. An open house is scheduled for Sunday, March 4th from 1 to 3 p.m. 215-657-2200 or centerschoolpa.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We are talking about the life, career, and music of Ethel Waters. And let me play another song that she sang. This goes back to late 1925, and it's a song called Shake That Thing.
to it, it's easy to do, cause she's that thing. Oh, shake that thing. I'm getting sick and tired of telling you to shake that thing. Now the old folks are doing it, the young folks too, but the old folks learn the young ones what you do about shaking that thing. Ah, shake that thing. I'm getting sick and tired of telling you to shake that thing. Now, Grandpapa Johnson, grab Sister Kate.
And again, that's Ethel Waters, a 1925 recording of a song called Shake That Thing. And we're talking with Donald Bogle about the life, the music, the career of Ethel Waters. He's written a book about her called Heatwave. That's a kind of bawdy, sexy song.
Very much so. It actually is one of my favorites of hers.
It's fabulous.
Because she obviously enjoyed it. And she, you know, she's very, very sexy. You know, early in her career, Ethel Waters was called Sweet Mama String Bean, and in her early years in black vaudeville and traveling, and she was slender, curvy. She did sexy bumps and grinds on stage. Of course, much later in her career, she wanted to forget all of that. But Shake That Thing was a big hit for her, and it really, you know, does reveal to us, you know, in the 20s, a new kind of sexual freedom. This was part of the thing that when her records started to really sell to whites as well, that, you know, the age of the flapper, when white women were fighting for their independence and to announce themselves, Ethel in her music, and I would say the same about Bessie Smith, they indicated they had always had theirs, and they didn't have fears about a woman's sexuality and about a woman speaking up for her sexual rights or her sexual needs.
You had talked about black vaudeville and Ethel Waters and other performers feeling as if they were getting ripped off, and in many ways they were. But it did take her and other black performers into the South, where they
She went into the South. And, you know, having grown up, you know, in Chester and Philadelphia, not that they were perfect, but still, you know, there were not the signs that said, you know, for white, for colored. And there were not the kind of blatant humiliations that she experienced in the South. You know, Ethel Waters was in Birmingham, and she was in a car accident, and she never forgot this. And she was pinned under the car, and there were whites who passed by and wouldn't help her and used the N-word and so forth. And then they finally did come. Someone took, you know, pity on her, and they had to get her to a hospital, and they had to get her into the colored wing. And so she never forgot that, never forgot it. But the other side of Ethel, which was interesting, was that when she was in the hospital, blacks in the South who knew of her heard about her injury, and they took up a collection for her. Mm. So there was always a mix for her. On the one hand, she could not forget the cruelty, and particularly, she, you know, with whites and blacks, but particularly with whites, because she did not like white people. She did not trust them for a long, long time. But on the other hand, she didn't forget a kindness that was extended to her. But in vaudeville, traveling in the South, she saw a lot. She also said that she saw brutality towards black men. She saw the body of a black boy that had been thrown into the lobby of a theater. She just said it was a horrendous experience. And of course, later she was going to use some of that. But vaudeville was tough. Tough for her.
Well, and after vaudeville, she does make her way to Broadway, but I guess early on, she actually had a job here in Philadelphia working at Horn and Hardart.
Well, after her first, you know, that her first sort of tour, she came home to Philadelphia. She wasn't sure she would stay in show business. She was working at Horn and Hardart. She said the automat. She got a chance to go to New York to appear at the Lincoln Theater, a big theater. And she just, it was a 2-week engagement. She was going to take it, but she didn't know what was going to happen. So she asked her friend to hold on to her job.
Just in case.
But she never came back. I mean, she never came back to work in that way. And when, you know, and then her career, that's when she goes to Edmonds eventually in New York, the club in Harlem. And, you know, Ethel started to record early in the game. She was not the first black woman to record the blues. Mamie Smith had done that with a song called Crazy Blues in 1920. Mm. But Ethel started to record in 1921 for a black company called Black Swan. And after she did that, she made the records. And Black Swan, which was headed by Harry Pace, they were very shrewd. They decided to send her on a tour. Hmm. And this was connecting, you know, it would sell more records and so forth. I mean, this was early in the game to have this kind of strategy. And they made use of the African-American press because she got great coverage in the Negro press of the past. It's Chicago Defender, Philadelphia Tribune, the Pittsburgh Courier. They, you know, they were covering her, but her tour, she came to Philadelphia and she appeared at the Standard Theater, and Jack Johnson, the heavyweight champ, was on the bill.
Oh, wow.
With her. And so the tour was successful. And I have to say this about her, because she got so much attention for an African American woman at this
time. In the 20s, we're talking
about. Yeah, and it continued into the 30s and so forth, into the 50s. That, I mean, she was one of the famous, most famous black women in the country. But in the beginning, it was only the Negro press,
right,
that covered her. The white mainstream press got to her a little bit later, really in the late 20s, when she, you know, when she goes to Columbia, signs a record company, record contract with them.
Well, let me play another song, and this is, we're doing it chronologically, but this is actually from an early talkie film on the show, and this is Ethel Waters singing a song called Am I Blue, and this is recorded in 1929. Let's listen.
A lonely woman waiting on the weary shore. I'm just a woman that's only human, one you should be sorry for. Woke up this morning along about dawn, without a warning I found he was gone. How could he do it? Why should he do it? He never done it before. Am I blue? Am I blue? Ain't these tears in these eyes telling you? Am I blue? Why, you'd be too, if each plan with your man done fell through. There was a time when I was his only one, but now I'm the sad and lonely one. Lordy, was I gay until today? Now he's gone and withdrew. Am I blue?
Yeah,
and I'll get into that.
Okay, and we are talking while we're listening to Ethel Waters, and our guest is Donald Bogle. He's written a biography of Ethel Waters called Heat Wave, The Life and Career of Ethel Waters, who was born in Chester, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, spent much of her childhood in and around Philadelphia, went on to have an extraordinary career as an actor and a singer, and we are both talking about her life and playing some of the songs that she recorded. This this goes back to 1929.
It's 1929. It was a big, big song for Ethel. Ethel was touring. She was in Los Angeles, and by then she's known. And I mean the movie people knew her. And King Vidor, the director, had wanted Ethel Waters for a movie called Hallelujah. King Vidor was a white director at MGM, and Hallelujah was a black film, very daring film in a sense to make at that time. And he wanted Ethel Waters, wow. And he couldn't get her. And she was always resentful about that, not with him, but that they hadn't located her. But nonetheless, when she was in California, she signed to do this. You know, the talkies were just coming in. I mean, full-fledged. And she does this movie, On With the Show, and she comes on essentially as herself. She has two musical numbers. One is Birmingham Bertha. The other is Am I Blue. And Am I Blue, they didn't think it was really going to be a hit. They thought the other song would do better, but it did. It was a big hit. And you can hear her, this song, where she's talking about a relationship, but she's not down and out. I mean, she really isn't. I mean, and she sort of lifts us, and she wants us to know this has happened to her, but it hasn't destroyed her, and she hasn't lost control. My feeling about Am I Blue, though, why it ultimately she connected so much with the song was that she was getting over a relationship, and she was involved with a producer named Earl Dancer, African American producer, and it was over, that relationship, and I think that she was reflecting on that.
And it seemed as if she had difficult relationships with men and with women.
And with women, yes.
I mean, it's not even clear. I'm not sure if she was married or not to
well,
these men, but she had a
thing.
Series
that's
of troubled relationships.
That's a funny thing, because this producer, Earl Dancer, who I mentioned, he was important to her career, and she's always said this. And Earl Dancer was the one who told Ethel that she had to go on what was known as the white time. That she had to, you know, at one point she was appearing almost exclusively, but not entirely, for African-American audiences. And he felt that she could make it on what they called the white time with white audiences as well on their turf. When she was at Edmonds, it was whites coming to her in Harlem on her turf. But he felt that she could play the big theaters, the big clubs, and so forth. But nonetheless, Dancer wanted to get her to Broadway, and she, you know, she introduced him as her husband, and they were living together. And then later, when the relationship was over, she said, he was never my husband. I was never married to him. But of course, you know, she couldn't live in sin at that time. So there were this thing that they were married, but there were others. Because, I had a researcher checking very strenuously to find marriage licenses and records and so forth. And we couldn't find them. So she, and there were these others that she was living with. Eddie Mallory was another. So, Ethel lived by her own. Yes, and she lived by her own rules. I mean, she was a very religious woman. But, you know, I've always felt Ethel did everything in the book at least twice. And her feeling was that her God understood her. And that her God was willing to accept whatever she did. But she also did have relationships with women. I interviewed a woman who knew Ethel in later years in California. This woman was younger than Ethel, and it was a platonic relationship. But she said that Ethel told her that she was talking about her earlier life, that she had been a lesbian, and that she was the best that ever did it. So, I mean, here was Ethel, and this was around the time when she was much older, known for being very religious and so on. But her attitudes towards sexuality were quite forward-looking and quite different than most might have realized.
And I do want to play Stormy Weather, but it seems it takes a confident woman to say that, you know, essentially God will forgive me for what I do.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's play Ethel Waters singing Stormy Weather, a song made famous by a number of people, but recorded by Ethel Waters in 1933. Let's listen.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather. Since my man and I ain't together, raining all the time. Life is bare, gloom and misery everywhere, stormy weather. Just can't get my poor self together. I'm weary all the time, the time. So weary all the time. When he went away, the blues walked in and met me. If he stays away, old rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. Can't go on. All I have in life is gone, stormy weather. Since my man and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time, keeps raining all the time. I walk around heavy hearted and sad.
And that's Ethel Waters singing Stormy Weather, recorded in 1933. And Donald Bogle, we also think of Lena Horne as singing Stormy Weather.
Very definitely. And that, you know, Ethel Waters did not get along with Lena Horne. I mean, to put it mildly, she loathed, despised, detested Lena Horne.
Was it mutual?
No, I don't. You know, Lena Horne actually had looked up to Ethel Waters, and I think they worked together in a movie called Cabin in the Sky that was released in 43. And I've often wondered about Lena, what it must have been like to work with someone you admired, and that person, you know, couldn't stand the sight of you. And that's what happened. They worked on the movie, and, you know, Ethel was older at that point. Lena was young, up and coming, and everyone I talked to who had been on the set said she treated Lena ruthlessly, that Ethel was protecting her turf. But then what happened, the thing that really made Ethel then despise her all the more, was that Lena made the movie Stormy Weather and sang the song. And that song is associated with Lena Horne now more than it is with Ethel, but that was Ethel's song. And, you know, the two versions, I think, you know, Lena's is fine, but I think Ethel's is a great version.
It is a pretty great version. Yeah. And we're going to take another short break and get back to our conversation with Donald Bogle. He's a film historian. He's written a number of books about African-American entertainers, actors, singers. And his most recent book is called Heatwave, The Life and Career of Ethel Waters. Stay with us. Much more conversation and music after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Abington Memorial Hospital supports WHYY and offers new technology that can permanently repair a condition commonly known as a hole in the heart. It develops when a small hole that helps circulate blood to an unborn baby doesn't close. Interventional cardiologists are using a self-expandable double umbrella made from wire mesh and polyester fabric to close the defect without surgery. The implanted device becomes a permanent part of the wall of the heart. To learn more, amh.org/heart.
Frank Calabrese Jr. was groomed for the mob at an early age. He remembers his father, part of a murderous Chicago crime outfit, telling him they'd killed somebody.
And I'm thinking, is this what other kids hear when their father comes home from work?
Frank Jr. later helped the FBI bring down the organization. On the next Fresh Air, Frank Calabrese Jr. His book is Operation Family Secret. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll see this Sunday's Russian presidential elections through the eyes of a journalist kicked out of the country for talking to the opposition. Also, Glen Campbell on living with Alzheimer's and saying goodbye to fans after 50 years of music. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with Donald Bogle about the life and career of Ethel Waters. I do want to play her singing from a review called As Thousands Cheer, book by Moss Hart, words and music by Irving Berlin. And this was the first Broadway show to give Ethel Waters equal billing with white performers. Let's listen to Heatwave.
A heat wave blew right into town last week. She came from the island of Martinique. The can-can she dances will make you fry. The can-can is really the reason why we're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The temperature's rising, it isn't surprising. She certainly can. She started a heat wave by letting us heat wave. And in such a way that the customers say that she certainly can. She had anatomy, made the mercury jump to 93. Yes, sir, we're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The way that she moves that thermometer proves that she certainly can. It's so hot the weatherman will tell you our record's been made. It's so hot a coat of tan will cover your face in the shade. It's so hot the coldest maiden feels just as warm as a bride. It's so hot a chicken laid an egg on the street and it fried. We're having a heat wave.
And that's Ethel Waters, a 1933 recording of Heat Wave. And Donald Bogle, what is she singing about?
Well, she's getting that sex in there. And
she sure
lighting up the town. It's interesting about this that it's from the Irving Berlin Moss Hart review, As Thousands Cheer. Irving Berlin had heard Ethel Waters in 1933 singing Stormy Weather at the Cotton Club. Duke Ellington led the orchestra. And like so many people in New York, that performance, he just couldn't get over it. And he was putting together this new show, and he wanted her in it. It was a white show. There were some African-Americans in it, but Ethel was the only major African-American performer. And she was a name by then. But when she does the show, Clifton Webb was in it, Marilyn Miller. You know, originally, they did not put her name above the title with the white stars. They felt they were giving her equal billing, but they were above the title and she was below. And I have a picture of a poster in the book. And she accepted it, you know, but Ethel knew that Berlin had given her some great material, four fantastic songs. Heatwave was one of them. And she got in, and it was interesting that many people felt she walked away with that show, that she was the one everyone remembered. And when the show went on tour later, and when it toured the South, Ethel went with the show. And Ethel, they knew in a way, couldn't be replaced. I mean, Clifton Webb could be, Marilyn Miller could be, but not Ethel. Now, also in that show, Berlin had written a very unusual song, and it was a song called Supper Time.
In fact, we're going to play that song, but before we play it, I want you to tell our listeners what this song is about, because they might not
they're
get
not,
it.
Yeah, they won't. What happened in the context of the review, it is about a woman who's preparing dinner, knowing that her husband is not coming home because he has been lynched. And this was powerful stuff for a Broadway review that, you know, in many ways it was light, it was fluffy, it was funny. But Berlin wanted it. And the interesting thing was that they didn't know if it would work. And they were in Philadelphia for tryouts. And they were at the Forest Theater. And they decided if audiences didn't accept it, they would drop it. And it's a credit to Philadelphians. They loved it, and they kept the song in.
And a credit to her singing.
Yes.
And this is Ethel Waters singing Supper Time from As Thousands Cheer, again recorded in 1933. Let's listen.
Supper
suppertime. Kids will soon be yelling for their supper time. How'll I keep from telling them that man of mine ain't coming home no more? How'll I keep explaining when they ask me where he's gone? How'll I keep from crying when I bring day supper on? How can I remind them to pray at their humble board? How can I be thankful when they start to thank the Lord? Lord, supper time.
And again, that's Ethel Waters singing a song called Supper Time from As Thousands Cheer, and recorded in 1933. And Donald Bogle, it's just a heartbreaking song.
Yeah, very moving song, very moving song. And you also sense in this her powers as an actress.
Yes.
Because, I mean, there is this feeling here that is very deep and intense for her. And as I mentioned, she said that when she had traveled in the South, she had seen the body of she said it was a black boy who had been brutalized and lynched, and this was her way now of telling that. And she said that, you know, telling it to this Broadway audience, mainly a white audience, and that you've got to listen and you've got to think. It's also interesting that, you know, this comes before Billie Holiday does Strange Fruit. And Strange Fruit, the lyrics are explicit that, you know, southern fruit hanging from southern trees. And but Ethel was with the Berlin song, was the first one to bring this in the context of the show, because the lyrics we may not know, but to bring in this social, political, racial content. And, you know, she didn't like Billie Holiday. And that may be another reason why that Billie Holiday got all this credit for Strange Fruit. Not that Ethel wasn't acclaimed for Supper Time. But, you know, Ethel as an actress now, she goes back to Broadway after she does As Thousands Cheer. She does a show called A Home Abroad in 35. And Ethel, I think that she really stopped, you know, her full-fledged music career much too early. And what happened was that Ethel wanted to be a dramatic actress on Broadway. And this was really just unheard of, to have a major female black star on Broadway. And she goes to Broadway and in 1939 does a drama called Mamba's Daughters, which is really about three generations of African-American women. Mm. And, you know, this is way before A Raisin in the Sun, which is dealing with black women, way before Into Zaki Shange's for Colored Girls Considered Suicide. But nonetheless, in that, the character she played, she felt she was expressing the torment that her own mother had gone through. And she connected to this so personally. And as an actress, in that, she was in the grip of the experience. The way she hadn't been in her music, and the music is still great, but it's just a different perspective with her music. But they said that opening night, the audience had a lot of skeptics and cynics there. How is this, you know, blues singer, musical comedy star going to come here? And it was such a powerful performance. She got at least 17 curtain calls by one count. And it was interesting that the critic for the New York Times, Brooks Atkinson, the most powerful dramatic critic, critic of drama in theater in America, he didn't like it. And it was interesting that Carl Van Vechten, who was a prime mover in the cultural scene in New York at that time. He gathered a group of artists, including Tallulah Bankhead, Oscar Hammerstein, and it was a whole group of them, and they put an ad in the Sunday Times saying, I have it in the book, a picture, and they felt that he was wrong. Hmm. And he went back and re-reviewed it.
I do want to close things out with His Eye is on the Sparrow, but even before we get to that, just a little chapter here. She was part of Billy Graham's, fundamentalist crusade, a performer.
Yes, yes, she did. I mean, Ethel, she goes to Hollywood, does movies in the 40s. She does TV in the 50s. She does Beulah, starring in her own show. I mean, all these barriers. And then she has a lot of problems. She has financial problems, problems with the IRS. And she goes to a Billy Graham crusade, and she's very moved, and she ends up performing at the crusades, drawing in a lot of people. And her signature song, which she had performed in The Member of the Wedding, was His Eyes on the Sparrow.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Yeah. And that was a Member of the Wedding, a 1952 film.
Yes, it had been it was on Broadway. It opens in 1950, and then they do the movie version. And it was her idea to use that particular song. They were looking for a number, and this was a song that she said was her grandmother's favorite. Mm. And she, it is a very powerful, moving moment. It was on the stage, and we can still see it in the film.
And I know that because we were talking before the show began, and sadly Whitney Houston died recently.
Yes, but Whitney Houston. I had met with Whitney Houston one time. She was going to star in a movie version of my book on Dorothy Dandridge, which she ended up not doing. But I had sent her a copy of Heat Wave. I never heard anything back. But in Sparkle, the movie that will be coming out soon, her last film, she did record His Eyes on the Sparrow for it. And I was told she was rather insistent about doing it. And it will be interesting to hear a version. Yeah. I'm sure they're still going to leave it in. They won't edit it out. But maybe this was her tribute to Ethel Waters, I hope.
So. And Ethel Waters died, as you said, she was in her early 80s.
Ethel Waters died in 1977, and she was 81 years mm-hmm. old, about to turn 81, yeah. And she, for me, with Ethel Waters, and I don't want your listeners to think they've heard the whole story here today. They haven't. There's so much more about her personal life and problems and so forth. But for me, for Ethel Waters, those last years were so heroic because she was in great pain and she didn't have much money and she had to keep working and she loved to perform. And her mother died around 1963, and Ethel kept going, and she gained so much weight. And she had hypertension, she had diabetes, she had all of these problems, and she was trying to work with them. One time she went on a pretty strict diet. But I look at her during that period that she had this great faith. She really did. And this faith kept her going, and she never gave up, and never, in a sense, stop performing, stop sharing with that audience.
And at one point, there's a long story here which we can't get into, but at one point she says, I'm a negress and proud of it.
Yes. You know, she also did catch a lot of flack with the rise of the civil rights movement because Ethel seemed to be critical of the NAACP, which years earlier, she was a great supporter of the NAACP and did fundraisers and so forth. She had become just politically very conservative. And she also became rather paranoid. And some people from an earlier era couldn't forgive her for going to the Nixon White House when there was a whole youth movement against Nixon and against the war in Vietnam. And she was at the Nixon White House. She went for Trisha Nixon's wedding. She called Nixon Dickie Boy and called Pat Nixon, I think, Patty Girl. And so I think this is the other thing that's happened, that she hasn't been remembered, that people wanted to forget that part of her career. But we can't forget her great achievements.
Well, on that note, Donald Bogle, thank you so much for joining us once again on Radio Time. times to talk about an extraordinary performer, and his book Heatwave, The Life and Career of Ethel Waters, has been published, and he teaches film at New York University and at the University of Pennsylvania, a film historian. He's written many books, including a book about Dorothy Dandridge. That's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Kevin Griffin, our engineer, and the show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder, with Jonathan Best, and we are closing things out with His Eye is on the Sparrow, and again from the 1952 film Member of the Wedding. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us in this hour of Radio Times.
Why should I feel discouraged? Why should the shadows come? Why should my heart be lonely away from heaven and home? For Jesus is my portion, my constant friend is He. For His eye is on the sparrow, and I know.